Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and Chris in the Paracast, we have Richard Taranto, author of War Over Lemuria. We have Geneva Hagen. We have Gene Steinberg. We have Chris O'Brien. And the reason I mention this fact in connection with another thing, we had a couple of abduction researchers on, UFO abduction researchers, just a couple of weeks ago. And what they said is they use some hidden factor that's in abduction cases that's never reported to determine whether the thing is factual or not. By knowing this particular factoid, they could evaluate the cases to see if they conform to this fact, and if not, you'd suspect the reality. So Palmer said, I guess this goes back to the 60s, when he first started talking about this fact, that he has this piece of information, and this piece of information is something he uses by which to judge whether a UFO sighting is real or not. Tell us more, Richard.
Yeah, but he, of course, wouldn't really tell exactly what this fact was, but he said it would tell him, you know, it didn't matter whether it was a UFO report or whatever, any bit of information that somebody was giving him. But if it's okay, I just read this one paragraph that he wrote that really gets into it. So this is Ray Palmer speaking. He says, first, let's say that there's an organization. Let's call it that, the organization, because this is the sort of group you don't name, not unless you want to wind up under the wheels of a truck or with a bullet in the back of your head. The organization is the real power behind the governments of the world. It is the same group we've many times called a hidden or secret government. Most people can't swallow that because they insist on looking all around the world for the people who constitute the government. The trouble is, one of them might be your neighbor. But oddly enough, your neighbor would not know he is a member of the organization. But you might be able to identify him by his philosophy of life. He would fit neatly into the plan. That's really my fact. I long ago discovered the plan. Once you know what the plan is, you can determine the truth or untruth of what anyone says to you. So I think that part of this organization and plan he's talking about, he's referring to this place in the atmosphere, in Etheria, as it's called.
Well, you know what? I'm going to read a paragraph or two from this interview. Now, we may have a recording of this interview because we played the entire interview on Bob Zanotti's Coffee Clutch show. Mm-hmm. And Bob's a friend of the show. Of course, he's also does our bumpers. He's kind of a staff announcer for the show. And if he can dig that up, we'll play it, parts of it anyway. Now, here's what he's saying, for example, about his fact. To get back to this particular thing, I say what he is saying is not realistically true, that he didn't take a trip and that I couldn't duplicate it. This is talking about a contactee, I guess. And I couldn't have gone along with him. But I want to call your attention to what Scully originally said in his book, Behind the Flying Saucers, in which he talked about this Mr. G and the fact that there was a flying saucer at some Air Force base, and that Mr. G had seen the bodies of three little men about 3 foot tall, and that they had a time system based on the Venus calendar and so on, watches, chronometers, which registered on a Venus system of time rather than Earth. And the one particular thing he put in this book that made me believe him, I disbelieve the rest of it entirely, he said that these little people were dressed in clothing peculiar to the Spaniards of 400 years ago. And when he said that, I believed him. Now, this will give you an indication of how far out my fact must be, because, and it involved more than I can explain here. But when somebody comes to me with a story like that, which has this one little thing in it, which makes everybody else disbelieve him, that's the thing that makes me believe it. Because if a man is telling a lie, he's not going to put it in such a glaring and obvious weakness. And that was the end of the interview, by the way.
Wow, sounds like the trickster to me.
But those cave pictures from France could have been similar to the dress of Spain 400 years ago.
Oh?
I'd have to look them up again on the internet and do some comparison, but just my general impression with what I know of history, it wouldn't be not the case.
I have a bit of interesting tie into what Geneva's been talking about, that piece of rock that she saw the people in. Shaver worked with a guy named W.G. Bliss. I mentioned him in the book.
Yes, I know him, or I knew him.
Oh, you did? Okay. He really feels strongly about Shaver's discovery of the rock books, but he diverges at some point and says that there's a mechanism at work in the universe that is constantly imprinting images that we can discern in just about everything, in growing trees, in rock, in anything that will take this, I don't know what you would call it, a vibration, sort of like a stylus, a needle on an old-fashioned phonograph when you're recording it. He says that these images, he calls them universal imagery, is in just about everything. And now Shaver did not like that. Shaver didn't like it at all. He said that, you know, it was exactly what he said it was, that these images were put there by this ancient civilization. But Bliss was saying that the images were just coming from outer space, from time immemorial, from extraterrestrial civilizations or whatever. What we're seeing, or what Shaver was seeing in those rock books, may not have been from this planet at all.
I'd like to add also that scientists now believe that the brain perceives through symbols. It's not that we perceive symbols and they mean something, but symbols are actually our means of perception. Unless we have already created a symbol for something, we don't perceive it. So basically, when we see something new for the first few times, we can't encode a memory of it because we don't have that. It's kind of like voice recognition software. So the brain takes the best guess at what this thing is likely to be and presents this to us.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the farther back you go in time to the most primitive times, at any point in the world, you will find the same symbols. Everyone in isolated little groups and tribes were drawing the same symbols. I find that very interesting.
That shows some kind of commonality early on, if nothing else.
Yep, that people were picking up on something, seeing the same things. I mean, I've seen stones that were carved, and originally that people used stones way before Shaver and saw things in the surfaces. It was mostly the surfaces of the stones. Indians would collect them. Shaver said he had this stone that was a foot. I think there was a picture of it in the book. And he was offered $20 for that foot that he found by some Indian woman who wanted it. Indians prize those particular things. For some reason, they have significance, this foot-type stone.
Wow.
This is all into the realm of Carl Jung and archetypal symbology that's cross-cultural, that we all share basic primal symbols, and they're inherent in all sort of the human subconscious. And I find this very fascinating. I think that these are areas, especially in the realm of UFO studies, that aren't really addressed, I think, adequately. One of the interesting things I'm getting from this Ray Palmer hinting around it, a certain sort of litmus test of information that he has. I can appreciate that it sounds to me that there's an element of absurdity that he would identify that would almost, as you mentioned, negate the entire experience. Yet in Palmer's mind, it would legitimize it and actually validate it in Palmer's mind. And I find that very interesting. I think a lot of people that have been out in the field and collected witness accounts can attest to this, that oftentimes people are very reluctant to give a specific detail about a sighting event because they would feel that it would just totally invalidate the rest of the experience and make them sound like they were crazy. And I've had people come to me later on and say, you know, there was one little part of this event that I experienced that I kind of didn't want to tell you because I didn't want you to think I was crazy. I've heard that on more than a few occasions. So I think this is a really interesting point that you guys are bringing up.
We'll have a lot more. The book is War Over Lemuria by Richard Toronto. We have Geneva Hagen joining us with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Freudian phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO at WebTV.net. That's MrUFO at WebTV.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeSig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeSig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeSig.com. And LeSig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeSig.com, spelled LeCIG.com. LeSig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
Positive results from satisfied customers of Heart and Body Extract continue to pour into our website, hbextract.com.
This is Al from New Jersey. One day I saw your ad for Heart and Body Extract, and it mentioned that it would help me with angina, so I decided to order. I figure I had nothing to lose.
Heart and Body Extract supplies your body with everything it needs to balance itself and maintain optimal heart and circulatory health with no negative side effects.
I took the formula 3 times a day as directed, and I kid you not, within 4 days, my angina pain was completely gone.
Order HB Extract by calling 866-295-5305 or online at hbextract.com. That's 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
I could not believe it actually stopped the pain. Heart and Body Extract actually works. This is just an amazing product. Even the numbness in my hands is completely gone.
Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Now, we posted a thread at our forums, forum.theparacast.com, in a place called Question Bank, where listeners had a chance to ask Geneva and Richard different things about their investigations. Chris, can you assemble some questions? Let's go for it.
Well, this comes from Sentry, a poster at forum.theparacast.com.
And he's going to be, by the way, a guest on next week's show. We're covering the Cash Landrum case.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Well, he says, Richard, the underlying themes of the Shaver mystery seem to have been recycled for the dark vision of ufology in the 80s. with sinister technologically advanced beings preying on and toying with humans with abductions, tortures, mutilations, and secret underground locations. Do you see the similarity? And could the belief in the Greys be just another manipulation of us by the Duros?
Yeah, you've seen a thread there, and that thread does exist. The Duros are definitely working against us, but Shaver himself wrote a sort of landmark pamphlet, booklet called Vermin from Space. And that came out, I think, in the early 70s. And that detailed how the aliens were definitely working against us. And I picked up on that thread. And interestingly enough, in a magazine called Official UFO, Gene, where you had an interview with J. Allen Hynek in there.
Yes, that goes back 100 years.
I know, and you won't realize it, but I had a piece in that same magazine, but under a pen name. I was Zenner Harrison Coit, and the article was called Everything You Ever Wanted to Believe About UFOs May Not Be True. And it goes into that, how these aliens are really out to get us and all. It was sort of a sensationalist article, but it was based on Shaver's alien worldview, how it's not a benevolent thing at all. And I think that it could be an outgrowth of the Shaver mystery early days, which also spun off conspiracy literature to a high degree.
They're out to get us.
Yeah, they're out to get us.
Chris, more questions?
You know, just because you think they're out to get you doesn't mean they're not. This is one from Tom, 1961, who's a recent addition to the forum.paracast.com family. And he asked several questions here. I think we've answered the first two, whether you think Shaver believed his story. It sounds like he did. He just wanted to remind you that he was in a mental institution. But this is an interesting question, and I think it's a valid one. Did Shaver ever try to write anything else on any other subjects? Do we have any indication that he, you know, obviously he wrote a lot of letters. He was an amazing correspondent. But did he ever attempt to write anything else?
Other than the Shaver mystery, you mean?
Correct.
And the rocks, of course.
Yeah, he did. He wrote some non-Shaver mystery stories. One was Why Skeets Malloy Has Two Heads, which I loved that story. It was in a magazine called Orbit in the early 50s. And he wrote some science fiction stories for a guy named Robert Lowndes, and those were published away from Ziff Davis. So he did have an existence away from the Shaver mystery. He wanted to be a writer. If Ray Palmer hadn't created this whole Shaver mystery mystique, I think in some ways Shaver would have been happier, because essentially Ray Palmer forged that whole Shaver mystery, and with Shaver being one of the central characters in it. And Shaver had no control over that, really, if you think about it. It was all created in amazing stories. What Shaver really wanted, and he wanted this back in the 30s and even in the 20s, was to become a writer, just like his brother Tate and his mother. They were a family of writers, and Shaver wanted to be a writer. But once he was branded as the guy who was the namesake of the Shaver mystery, he was kind of dragged along by this image of the Shaver mystery. And he tried to break out of it, but like you say, after the late 60s, and his banishment from Wisconsin after the Freedom Publishing scandal, he kind of went underground and was low-key because he didn't want to get arrested again and sent back to the asylum. That was always a continuing fear he had. So in Summit, he pretty much became a correspondent and wrote for fanzines like Caveat Emptor and others. And I didn't start my fanzine until after he had died, so I was not among those. Although I did have a Shaver interview that I reprinted that I did with him. But anywho, I hope that answers that question.
Well, you know, that brings up an interesting point in my mind. When he originally approached Ray Palmer, and Palmer hijacked his story, embellished it, kind of put it in his own, sort of became more than an editor. Do you think that it doesn't sound like Shaver really had resentments about that, because it put him on the map? But do you think that there was some sort of underlying resentment that existed because of the way that Palmer hijacked his story?
Yeah, I think there was, because once Palmer started putting in his own ideas, about it, especially the bit about, you know, these are Garros and Taros could be on the astral plane or they could be in Atmospheria for all we know. That really got Shaver upset.
Oh, here's a question from Solarian, who's been a poster at forum.theparacast.com for about a year now, and he's one of our active members, always asks good questions. And this is a good one, too. I kind of think any of the three of you can really look at this question and kind of scratch your head. What's your opinion on why the fantasy genre has gained more popularity than science fiction in the past 13 years? And that's a good question. I've been wondering that myself with all the vampires and werewolves and, you know, this resurgence of fantasy stuff. Is this because of video games? Is this because of Japanese cartooning? What do you guys think?
I think it's sheer laziness. Science fiction today, because of the level of our technology, requires a lot of knowledge of science, whereas fantasy, you recycle the same old stories. I call it bulk fiction, and everything now is published in sets of three or five or more. And usually the writer shows signs of burning out after volume two or three, but they still have publisher's contracts, so on it goes. And you could take it and place it in any period of history, and a lot of them are set in the past, and it would read just as well. I think it's kind of a form of cheating. It's not really related to science fiction.
Geneva, do you think it partly is due also to the way the publishing industry has changed in the last 15 years? They really have condensed down to just a handful of major publishers. They love to do these series and continue them on. You know, they brand things, they license things, like Iron Man, and, you know, they're going into the DC Comics constantly for movies. And I think that it's partly due to the publishing industry, too, that once they get something they feel is a winner, like the Twilight series of vampires, suddenly vampires became very popular, as is werewolves now.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, True Blood, which is also based on a series of novels, although I think the author is planning to stop writing those. But right now, the show remains very, very popular on TV. We have Richard Taranto. The book is War Over Lemuria. We have Geneva Hagen with Gene and Chris in
The Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Got a simple question for you. Can you sell?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you sell the intangible?
If yes, and you'd like to work 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, with no overtime, no weekends, if you're passionate about not closing sales, but about opening relationships, if you truly have a desire to serve global clients who need your advertising expertise, and you're local to the Twin Cities and Burnsville, are hardworking, self-driven, with experience in sales, marketing, or advertising, are personable and a whiz on the phone, GCN wants to talk with you right now. GCN GCN, the Genesis Communications Network, is one of the largest independent talk radio networks in the world, and we're hiring right now. We offer benefits and an excellent commission structure. Experience preferred, but we'll train the right person. Is that you? Submit your resume today to advertise@GCNlive.com. Again, that's advertise@GCNlive.com. Come work with the Genesis Communications Network, an equal opportunity employer.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Springtime is sale time at Herbal Healer Academy. Current customers know this is the time to save big and stock up at HerbalHealer.com. New customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Right now, Herbal Healer's spring specials include our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. CoQ10 with Hawthorn, Colon Enhancer, Sea Cucumber, Super Fam and Super Male Plex, plus Glucosamine Chondroitin, our best-selling liquid CalMag Vitamin D, and our colloidal minerals, all on sale for spring at HerbalHealer.com. And Herbal Healer also offers certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on to our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988. Herbal Healer Academy at HerbalHealer.com.
Hi, this is Ted Phillips, listening to the Paracast, and it's as good as it gets, believe me.
With Gene and Chris, we have Geneva Hagen joining us, Richard Taranto, author of War Over Lemuria. We're looking at the life and times of Richard Shaver and Ray Palmer and their amazing influence to the world of science fiction, which, as we said before, results in Star Wars and Star Trek and all that kind of stuff. Chris, some more questions?
This one comes from JT, who's a longtime poster. He's been posting at forum.theparacast.com for, almost 5 years now. He has a couple of questions. The first one is, you mentioned the Shaver paintings. Do you know if any of these still exist? I mean, are they collectible items? And he says, I dearly hope you will publish a glorious coffee table book of these existing slides of his otherwise lost art.
They do exist, although a lot of them were lost and destroyed because Shaver, being as poor as he was, didn't have the finances to buy canvases on stretched on frames and things like that. So he would paint them on what he had, which was cardboard boxes, unfortunately. One of the most acidic type papers to paint on, and he sometimes painted on plywood. I have the Attack of the Ape Bats painting that he had painted on plywood, and that has held up. Although the materials that he used, that Geneva described, and by the way, her description of how he painted was exactly the same description I got from Tal Levesque, who also visited Shaver, and Shaver demonstrated how he did his paintings and the sifting and the swirling and all that. It was identical. So he was repeating that method, although Tal said that he didn't necessarily even need to project a rock slice image onto the canvas, that he could just sort of wing it on his own, and he would sort of call up the Ray people, you know, like the Tiros, and have them sort of impress an image too. So he did both. He did the projected image and sort of wing. winged it with this sort of psychic painting, too. The paintings do still exist. Some do. One New York collector bought up a bunch of them, thinking he was going to make a killing. And then he ended up selling the collection, not to a museum, but to a private collector. And I'm not sure where all those paintings went. But I still have some. And I hope to put together that coffee table book, because while I was researching my second book, I came across an envelope in my files from Shaver, and it may have been from Dottie, because after he died, she just kept sending me stuff that she was either going to throw out or she would send to me. She destroyed a lot of material from his files just because she was so despondent after he died. But one thing I found was an envelope full of color slides that Shaver had taken of his different paintings, probably to promote himself to a gallery or something. So with that as a basis, I think I could put together some kind of a nice coffee table book, but that may be sometime in the future.
It'd be interesting. I've seen reproductions of some of his artwork, and he was quite a visual guy, no question about it. He did have, I think, some natural talent. This is another question from Century. And he kind of puts it out there for everyone. And he starts it out with a quote from Captain Edward J. Ruppelt from True Magazine, 1954. And the quote is, "Obscured by the hoaxes, distorted by the literary charlatans who hail every vagrant light as a verified spaceship, the case of the flying saucer rests on the inexplicable instances that have cropped up year after year since 1947. And Century says, "Literary charlatans? Any educated guesses as to who he was referring to?"
Yeah. He had it in for Ray Palmer, that's for sure.
Yeah, moving right along. This is another question from our good friend JT. "I'm just reading the engagingly written but visually pedestrian Fred Natas book on the subject. Besides having known Shaver and spending decades studying and discussing his works, what other reasons are there to pick your book over his?"
Well, I haven't read his book, so I can't really say. Although, from what I've been hearing and in the reviews that have been coming up, people are saying that mine is much more extensively researched than the Natas book, which makes some sense because I took 6 years to write. For me to research and write the book, War Over Lemuria, and I became aware that Fred Natas was starting to write his book sometime last year, so it took him about a year to put together his material. But I also know that he did not have access to the same people that I had access to, two of which was Ray Palmer's daughter, Linda Jane Palmer, and Richard Shaver's daughter, Evelyn Bryant. So I've got it from the horse's mouth, so to speak, there.
Wanted to ask you about that. With regard to Shaver and Palmer and their descendants, any budding writers among them, or did that all end with the deaths of Shaver and Palmer?
I'm afraid it did. So Ray Palmer's son, Ray B. Palmer, says that the writing bug didn't bite him, and he has a very difficult time writing, which is why he never came out with a book on his father. It kind of surprised me that he still hasn't written anything, that it took all these years for me and Fred Natas to do it. And as far as Shaver, his daughter is not interested in writing at all. She became, though, an art teacher, so she was following in her dad's footsteps as an artist.
So there you go. We had Raymond B. Palmer on the Paracast some weeks back, and it was fascinating to get his remembrances of his dad.
Yeah. I was really pleased that I got to meet Linda Jane Palmer. She came out here to California a couple of years ago with her husband, Bob, and we hung out for a couple of days and talked a lot about her dad, and that's when she gave me permission to reprint her dad's stuff for my book.
Now, Palmer had actually planned to write his own autobiography, but somehow it never came to pass, or it came to pass, but not quite in the way that anyone expected.
Well, if you call 36 pages in The Secret World an autobiography, that's it. But he didn't really cover much at all of his life, you know, and he anguished over that book for years. It took him something like 4 or 5 years just to pin those 36 pages, which is why he had to piggyback Shaver's rock book work onto that book.
But this is, you know, quite interesting because we have to look at Palmer, who was the quintessential hack writer. He could churn out tens of thousands of words on a moment's notice. He wrote dozens and dozens of short stories and novel-length books and magazine articles over the years. Mm-hmm. He edited all these publications. He ghostwrote stuff for people. He answered all those letters in his magazines. But he couldn't finish his autobiography. Why?
Because he just goes back to his boyhood. You know, he just couldn't talk about his personal life. He had too many secrets in his life. Like, nobody knew that he had been married before he married Marjorie. Nobody talked about that. He didn't write about it anywhere, even though he would write about everybody else's wedding and engagement and amazing stories. He never said a word about that. It was only because Palmer's daughter that I found out, and then I did a little research, found his marriage certificate. Yes, he was married.
As you can see, getting the truth about Ray Palmer's background is in itself a job and a half, and then some, because Ray wasn't always forthcoming about it. We'll go into more about the things we didn't know about Ray Palmer's life and Richard Shaver and more. The book is War Over Lemuria with Richard Taranto, with Gene and Chris and Geneva Hagen. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio. Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
Ouch! My back is out again.
Hi, Dr. Ortman with Wellspring Spinal Care. If you're experiencing neck, mid, or lower back pain, this information is for you. One of the complaints that I hear is patients receive their typical adjustment, only having to repeat them as the pain returns. Putting the bones back in place is only half of the battle. At Wellspring Spinal Care, we have the entire solution. We use the NUCA approach, utilizing three-dimensional x-rays and gentle touch technology to deliver specific correction. We then design a custom nutritional supplement program which provides essential nutrients targeting the areas of concern. With a NUCA approach and proper nutrition, you'll be on your way to a faster and more permanent recovery. To get you on the road to wellness, visit drortman.com. That's drortman.com. Or call us today, 952-303-9124. That's 952-303-9124. Wellspring Spinal Care. Chiropractic done right.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light Systems system today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hey, gang, as you can imagine, living with the moniker America's Mr. Right can be kind of tough at times. But you know what? It's easy to live up to the challenge when you're feeling good. Hi, everybody. I'm Jason Lewis, and that's why I watch what I eat and supplement my diet with great products from Youngevity, like their great vitamin mineral complex drink or a protein shake or my favorite probiotic dark chocolate packed with antioxidants. You know, I love these products, and I'll bet you will, too. And now you can get them all at JasonLewisTeam.com. Now, look, these are just the things I like from Youngevity, but if you're looking for, a sports drink endorsed by an NBA All-Star or a shot of Pollen Burst, the best energy drink on the market, it's all here, too. All you have to do is go to JasonLewisTeam.com or call 1-855-310-TEAM. Now, that's 1-855-310-TEAM. Get all these products and more and feel like America's Mr. Right. It's JasonLewisTeam.com.
Hi, this is nuclear physicist lecturer Stanton Friedman. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
It's our final segment of the Paracast with Gene and Chris. We have Geneva Hagen joining us on the panel. Richard Toronto, the book is War Over Lemuria. We're talking about the final days of Ray Palmer. And I gather here, Richard, that he had written so much fictional stuff about his life that actually telling the truth, he couldn't handle the truth, could he?
No, he couldn't handle the truth. He believed in keeping secrets as something sort of beneficial. And he often would say that. If you go through a lot of his writings and his editorials, I mean, his whole life story is really in all those editorials, in all of those magazines, and there's a ton of material in there, but it takes forever to go through it all. And you might get a little gem here and a gem there, but you'll be spending hours reading through all this stuff in days. But he often would say, don't believe what I'm telling you. I tend to lie, and I lie all the time. And, you know, he'll drop that in and then move right on and tell you about something that you're supposed to believe in, you know. And he would say that about his autobiography. In Forum magazine, he was constantly telling his readers, you know, I've got to write the truth, but, you know, what is the truth? I don't know. What's true right now is not going to be true for me tomorrow. And he was like I pointed out in the book, he's like an octopus that just disappears in a cloud of black ink, and the ink were his words.
It's almost as if he didn't want people to know the truth.
Didn't want to know him for some reason, and people would remark about that it was very difficult to get to know who he was. But I think that because of his background and because of Shaver's background, both of them being more or less ostracized in their own way, that's why they hit it off, and that's why they sort of hooked up with one another as a team all those years, even though Shaver was a reluctant member most of the time.
They were birds of a feather in some ways.
Oh, yeah. They were definitely brothers under the skin. That's what I described them as. And that's what Ray Palmer said. Dottie told me that when she called Ray Palmer to tell him that Dick Shaver had died, he said it felt as though he had just lost his brother.
Even though there were, like, family members feuding a lot.
They were always feuding, that's right, but it was that underlying quality that, you know, they were both reviled by everyone. They were not believed by everyone. They both suffered a lot in their lives, physically and emotionally, and had to claw their way out of that existence. And that cemented their relationship.
Now, did Shaver ever try to do a full autobiography of himself?
Only in fictionalized way in The Dream Makers. The Dreammakers was a novel he wrote in 1948, I think, and it was going to be part of the Aldebaran Press that he was trying to start his own publishing house, and Aldebaran Press was the name. And he was going to write this huge 800-page work called The Elder World. But in the meantime, he wrote The Dreammakers, and he went into his early life and his school life. And a lot of it was true. I did research and found out that it was true. But he basically, in that story, tells the history of the voices and when and how the voices came to him. But that's the closest he got. When I put it to him in 1975 that we needed to collaborate on the book on his life, he wrote one page for me and sent it to me. And that was about 6 months before he died. And so I was left with this one page and basically didn't know what to do with it because I didn't really know Shaver or what really went on in his life. So when I started Shavertron, that was my way that I was going to somehow collect the information I needed. It was going to put me in touch with people. And it did help to some extent, but it took me all this time to finally get the book done because the story is so complex.
Now, looking back at the lives of Shaver and Palmer that you researched, what is your feeling about them? Especially Palmer, would you have liked to have known this man as he came out to be, not what people thought of him?
I think I would have really admired him, and everyone who, including you, who met him, he was a charming, very personable guy, just as Shaver was, but they were very different personalities. I think I would have liked him, although I think it would have been exasperating in some ways not knowing what to believe, because people who knew him for long periods of time, even then, weren't sure what he was telling him was true.
Now, interesting thing, too, where as Shaver retired to this little cottage in rural Arkansas, in his hometown in Amherst, Wisconsin, where he had moved and his family moved, he was a pillar of the community, Ray Palmer.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He was a member of the school board for years there. This kind of stuff never really got out, but he was in the Lions Club and his wife, Marjorie, she started a couple of women's clubs there. They became definitely a pillar of society there.
Now, the impression I got when I first entered the door with my companions is that Marjorie was very protective towards Ray, and we understand because of his condition. And when we saw him in 1965, this is some years after he suffered an accident in the basement of his home where he fell and he hurt himself, and he was barely able to walk after that.
That was in 1950, right, just before they moved to Amherst.
What's even more unusual is at that point they also thought he was going to die, but he claimed in his books that he was operated on by a team of doctors from the astral plane, including the ghost or spirit of the doctor who supposedly botched the operation on his spine when he was a child.
That's right. And he told the story not only in his magazine, but one of the first people he told it to was William Hamling, who then told me the story when I visited Hamling in Palm Springs in 2009. So it was a very real experience for him. And Hamling would always defer to Ray Palmer or anything like that. He says, yep, maybe he did. You know, I mean, what the heck? The guy ended up walking. They said he wasn't going to walk again. He could die. Look what happened. He ended up walking again.
Well, I know that when I saw him, he could walk, but slowly.
A shuffle.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and his daughter said he would often fall, and he would get very angry with himself over that.
But he'd get right back up.
Yeah, he would get right. I mean, the guy was amazing. He was totally amazing. He had willpower to the nth degree.
And you kind of hoped he would have been more successful in his latter years because he made most of his money, I guess, from printing other people's books and magazines rather than publishing his own.
Yeah, if he hadn't set up his own print shop, he would have probably disappeared from the scene entirely. I think the Palmer magazines would have gone away probably in the late 60s. But in 1962 or 3, that's when he acquired a couple of high-speed presses. He said he put another mortgage on the farm, and they set it up in the old schoolhouse there. and they were printing books and other things. One thing that Linda Palmer told me, she didn't really go along with her father's dreams and mysticism. It was kind of embarrassing to her, she said. She has an entire chapter in my sequel book called Sailing Down Tomorrow River, and she talks a lot about the people that came by to visit. They kind of scared her off a lot of times, but how much they were printing out of house, you know, to make money. They had about 17 employees. They had to keep them paid. And she talked about the time she met L. Taylor Hansen down in Arizona in Mesa when she was trying to get the copyright to He Walked the Americas.
The book is War Over Lemuria. Richard Toronto, you have a website we can check out?
Yeah, www.shavertron.com. It needs a major update. There's no information about the book there, but if you go on Amazon, you'll find the book there.
Geneva, do you have a website yet?
No, only my Facebook page.
Geneva Hagen on Facebook. If you're nice, she'll accept you as a friend. You can find Chris O'Brien at OurStrangePlanet.com. You can find us at ThePowerCast.com. On Twitter, we are also ThePowerCast. Geneva Hagen, Richard Toronto, thank you both for joining us this week on The Paracast.
Oh, it's been a pleasure to do this. It brings back so many memories, and I have so much more I'd like to discuss with you, Richard.
Yeah, I feel the same. It's like all these years in between, and we've got so much we could talk about, our fanzines and all that. So, and actually, I'm going to try a reprint of all the run of Shavertron, just like you guys are doing with Caveat Emptor.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Great news, pure water lovers. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has a special discount offer for all GCN listeners. You can't do better than a Big Berkey for economy. For only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. There's none better than a Big Berkey for emergency preparedness as a backup water source. And you just can't beat a Big Berkey to remove dangerous chlorine, all types of fluoride, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and unhealthy byproducts from municipal water. Berkey water filter systems are even powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. For the gold standard in water filters, get a Big Berkey at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And all GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. For details, call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.